All right, today is Monday, February the 20th, 1995, and this tape is for the Society for American Baseball Research Oral History Committee. And my name is Rick Bradley, and I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, with Jim Gleason. Jim, when you were playing baseball, it seems like a lot of the guys had nicknames, Dizzy, Daffy, Ducky, and so on. Did you ever have a nickname?
GG.
And where did that...
It came from when I was in college. Some guy hung it on me in Rockers College back in the 30s, early 30s.
You were born here in Kansas City?
Born and raised here.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about growing up here. What your dad did for a living and how you got interested in playing ball.
Well, I was born in 1912 out on the east side of Kansas City. And I went to school here in Kansas City, went to grade school at 53rd and Troost, St. Francis Xavier School, and after I got out of school, I went across the street where Rockhurst High School was located, and I spent 4 years at Rockhurst High School, and then I spent 4 years in Rockhurst College. And there was a gentleman, a scout, baseball scout, by the name of Eddie Herr, who came to see me play in the spring of 31 or 32. No, 31, he came to see me play, and he was a scout for the Yankees. And at that time, he wanted me to sign in my junior year of college. But of course, I was full of rah-rah in those days and captain of the football team the next year in 32. And I decided to stay in college. So when the 33 baseball season at Rockhurst College started, in the meantime, he went to the big league meeting with Cleveland in the fall previous, and he got let out. He was scouting for the Yankees. So at that time, he had a good friend by the name of Cy Slapnicka. And he told Slapnicka, he said, you better go out and see him. So he came out, and of course we got together, and I signed with Cleveland June of 1933. And I can remember after I graduated, I got on a train and went to Cleveland and worked out with Cleveland before the regular season game. And of course, they didn't know where to send me at that time. But on June the 11th of 1933, there was a fellow by the name of Harry Lane, who was a manager at the Zanesville, Ohio club, their farm club. And he slid into second base or third base and broke his leg. So of course, the next day I was on my way to Zanesville and played my first game of pro ball in Zanesville in June the 12th of 1933. And incidentally, I struck out three times that first time. But of course, I was not used to the lights or anything. But it settled down, and I think we won the Middle Atlantic League Championship. And incidentally, there were four fellas on that ball club in 33 that ended up in the big leagues. There was Clay Bryant, a pitcher, and Al Milner, a pitcher, and a fellow by the name of Roy Hughes, and myself. We all played in the big leagues after that. But the next year I went to New Orleans in 1934, And I was there in 34 and 35. Of course, that was a farm club for Cleveland. They had some kind of working agreement with Cleveland, and the manager of the New Orleans ball club was Larry Gilbert. And I played there in 34 and 35, had a good year in 35. And then the following winter, they say they sold you to Cleveland. So in 1936 is when I went to Cleveland. And when I went up to Cleveland in 33, they were playing in the big stadium downtown. But when I went back there to play in 36, they were playing in League Park. And that's where I played most of the games in 36 in League Park with Cleveland. And one of the things that stick in my mind that when I was at Cleveland, our club was going real bad, and they had us come out in the morning at 10 o'clock, and we had to have bat practice and work out. And along about the middle of May, or the latter part of May, they brought in a young fellow from Iowa. And he was just out of high school. Of course, in Iowa, you finished high school early. And I guess it was around the 20th of May. And they brought him in to work him out just to pitch batting practice. So during that time, he was throwing so hard that the guys didn't want to have batting practice against him. So one day at noon, after we had worked out at 10 o'clock, we used to have lunch in the clubhouse. And of course, this young man was sitting over on the other side of the clubhouse, and he looked kind of lonesome, and I thought, well, I said, nobody ever spoke to me when I got up there, and then maybe nobody's going to speak to him. So I went over and asked him how he was getting along, and I asked him what his name was. He said, Robert Feller. And I said, where are they going to send you? He says, they're going to keep me around here and let me work at the ballpark, and I'm going to pitch for the Fisher Bodies on Sunday. He said, but they are going to let me pitch an exhibition game against the Cardinals on July the 7th. Well, our club was going so bad that they had to make changes, and I was one of the ones that went back to New Orleans. I think I went back with Ralph Weingartner, and they brought up another young fellow from New Orleans, Roy Weatherly come up and played in the big league for some time. But I was playing left field for New Orleans, and it was around the 7th or 8th of July, and I went out there and played in the afternoon in those days. And I was out playing left field, and the kid on the scoreboard hollered down to me, and he says, some kid by the name of Feller had just struck out 7 Cardinals in 3 innings in an exhibition game. So that's how Bob got started. Of course, the next week he pitched in the big leagues. I think he struck out about 17. But I was always wondered if it happened to rain on that day and he got rained out in that exhibition game, if he ever got to the big leagues that early. But he was quite a fella, and he could throw hard and was a hell of a pitcher. That was in 36. Well, they sent me back to New Orleans, and then I was recalled by Cleveland, and Cleveland tried to they sold my contract, I think, to Kansas City, my hometown. But I never did play. I couldn't get together with Johnny Kling and so on. And of course, they didn't pay the big salaries like they're doing today. So I kept holding out and holding out. And Kansas City traded me to Newark, New Jersey for Buzz Boyle. And I had just got married in February before, so I end up in Newark in 1937. Then we had a great ball club in 37. We win the pennant in the International League by 26 games. And on that team of 37, in 1939, there were 14 players on that team who was in the big league. And of course, we had George McQuinn at first, Joe Gordon at second, Bay Dawgren at third, Nolan Richardson at shortstop. I played left field. We had Bob Seeds and Charlie Keller in right field. Charlie Keller was just out of the University of Maryland. And then we had the two catchers, Rosar and Hershberger. And on the pitching staff, we had Atlee Donald, Joe Beggs, Steve Sundra, and Russo. And there might have been another one. But everybody that I mentioned there that was on that club in 37 went to the big leagues 2 years later. And Oscar Vitt was the manager of that ball club. Then in 38, I went back to Newark. And Newark won the pennant that year by only 10 games. And Johnny Noone was the manager. And of course we had, Charlie Keller was still there, and Bob Seeds, I think Bob Seeds was sold to the Giants in the middle of the season. And then we played, well, to go back to 37, we played Columbus Redbirds, the Cardinal outfit, in the Little World Series. And they came into Newark to open the series, and they beat us three straight games. And then we had to go to Columbus, and we win four straight, which was quite a feat. So back to 38 then, we played the Kansas City Blues, who in the meantime had changed ownership here. The Yankees, I think, came in at that time and took over the Kansas City club. And we played them in the Little World Series here, and also in Newark, of course. And they beat us. They beat us in the Little World Series. Then in this August of 38 is when they sold me to the Cubs. And I was to report the next spring to Catalina Island. And I was with the Cubs in 39 and 40. In the 39 season, Dizzy Dean was there. He was with us then, and he would pitch. They would advertise that Dean was going to pitch on Sunday. And every Sunday, they'd have about 35 or 40,000 people come out to see Dean. And on an ordinary Sunday, you'd be lucky if you had 15 or 20,000. but they all wanted to come and see old Diz. And poor old Diz, his arm was bad, and he couldn't hardly break a pane of glass at that time. But they all come out to see him. And then in 40, of course, we had Billy Herman there and Stan Hack, and we had quite a few first basemen. We had Cavaretta. Cavaretta broke his leg in early spring, or early the season in 39, and then we had two or three different first basemen. We had Zeke Benora, and we had Rip Russell, and I think Cavaretta was out for nearly a year. And then in 1939 was the best year I had in the big league. And towards the end of the season in 39, Gabby Hartnett was our manager. And he told me at one time there, he said, as long as I'm here, you're going to be here. So about two or three weeks after the season, Hartnett gets fired. And then I turn around about a week later, they trade Bobby Maddock and myself to Cincinnati. And I think Myers and Wilson came from Cincinnati. I think Wilson was the manager and Myers played shortstop for the Cubs of that next year. And then I reported to Cincinnati. Cincinnati had won the pennant in 39 and 40, and I thought, man, this is going to be lovely. I'm going to try to win it again. But I was a day late and a dollar short. When I got to the Cubs in 39, they had won the pennant in 38. Mm-hmm. So I go to Cincinnati, and they win the pennant in 39 and 40, and they lose. We finished third in 1941. And then in 42, I was there a couple of months in 42, and they traded me to Columbus. 1942, and played with Columbus there, and it was a Cardinal outfit, and at that time we finished up playing in the Little World Series again. And then in the fall of 42, I joined the Navy. And I helped win the war at the submarine base in Pearl Harbor. But in 42, when we started the baseball season, I was at Norfolk, Virginia. And we started working out in the middle of January, and that's the first time I'd ever seen a net that you had batting practice in. So around the first week in March, we had an exhibition game with Washington, and Washington had only been in spring training for 3 or 4 days. Now, we had a pretty good ball club at Norfolk. We had Vinny Smith catching. We had Eddie Robinson on first base. We had Benny McCoy on short second base. And we had a problem at shortstop, because we had two guys, one by the name of Rizzuto and the other one by the name of Pee Wee Reese. So what the coach had to do, he had to get rid of one of them. So he sent Pee Wee Reese over to the Naval Air Station. And in the outfield, we had Don Padgett and what's the Maggio's brother's name?
Vince or Dom?
Dominic. He was in center field, and I played right field. Then we had the pitching staff. We had Walt Masterson. and Freddie Hutchinson and a few AAA pitchers. But anyway, we played an exhibition game with Washington first week. They'd only been in spring training about 4 days. We'd been working out for a couple of months. We beat them 12-3. And the next day in the Washington Post, Shirley Povich wrote a big article in the Post, "Why are all the big league ball players at Norfolk, why aren't they out at sea fighting?" So 3 days after that, I was on my way to Pearl Harbor.
Thanks to Shirley Povich.
Yeah. And I was in the service for 3 years. I got out in, it was around the Christmas time or the first of the year in 45. And then when the 46 season started, I was with Columbus. And then in the middle of the season, they traded me to Louisville. And incidentally, when they traded me to Louisville, Louisville got in the Little World Series. And who did we play but Montreal? And who was this Montreal? It was Jackie Robinson. And of course, he was a great favorite up there, and they beat us. That was the Montreal was sort of was their pitch, and he was one of the pitchers for Montreal. So now we're up to there. In 47, I played a little while at Louisville, and then they traded me to Milwaukee when it was the Brewers. And I played in Milwaukee. They traded me to Milwaukee, and I finished playing at Milwaukee in 48 and 49. And then I told Jake Flowers at Milwaukee that I wasn't going to play anymore after 49. So I came home, and at that time, Park Carroll was the general manager here at Kansas City, and Joe Cool was just appointed manager. And Mr. Carroll called me up, and he wanted to know if I would be able to be a player coach for the Kansas City Blues, which was the Yankee Farm Club at that time. And he said, "You won't have to play, you just have to pinch hit." Yeah, I was about 38 years old at that time, and I was getting a little weary to be playing. I ended up playing 80 games that year. I couldn't hardly get out of bed after a doubleheader on Sunday. So I told Park, I said, "Well," I said, "I'm through. But in the meantime, the Yankees offered me a managing job in the minor leagues. And I went to Muskegon, Michigan in 49. I got that date right?
It's 51.
Yes, I was here in Kansas City as a player coach in 50.
51.
Then in 51, I went to Muskegon for the Yankees. And then in 52, I went to Binghamton, New York. And incidentally, I could have run for mayor in Binghamton, because I was there three different times. I was there in 52, 61, and I think it was 67 for a half a year. And the last day in Binghamton in 67, they run the bulldozer right through the center field fence for the new highway. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up, I was home for a couple of years with the illness in my family. And then I think in 59 it was, after I had after my mother and my father died. I called Johnny Johnson in New York, and he sent me to Kearney, Nebraska, in the rookie league in 59.
Okay, I have 57 down, is that?
No.
Nope, this, you know, they do make a lot of mistakes in this book, Jim, so
okay.
I'll change that.
And then in 1960, Roy Hamey wanted me to go to Amarillo, Texas. So I went to Amarillo, Texas. And I think we had three clubs during that season. We had one going, one playing, and one coming. I had a bad ball club. But the greatest thing about that ball club was Leroy Thomas, who played the outfield for us. And he was there for a while, hit real good. But we never did play real good. And then in 62, I think I got a job with the Kansas City A's. Now, but in the meantime, when I was home with the illness in the family, Boudreau was here with the Kansas City A's, and Boudreau got fired, and Harry Kraft was the coach, and he moved up to the manager, and Park Carroll, who was the general manager here at the A's, he called me and wanted me to come and fill in for him the last 6 weeks. That was in 57. Then in 59, I went to Kearney. 60, I went to Amarillo. 61, I was back at Binghamton. And then in 63, I think I was ended up scouting for the Kansas City Athletics. And I scouted there in 62 and 63, I think. And then in the fall of 63, my friend Yogi was appointed manager of the Yankees. And he called me up right after that, wanted to know if I'd be interested in coaching the Yankees with him. And after thinking it over, I couldn't pass that up. So in 64, I was with the Yankees. And then after the 64 season, when the Cardinals beat us, what was the manager's name at the Cardinals?
Johnny Keene.
Johnny Keene. Well, during that month of August, we lost three or four straight to the White Sox. And of course, then they come out and say, Yogi's done. Papers come out, Yogi's done. But I know that my locker in the Yankee Stadium was right next to Yogi's office, and I know those guys that come in there, the newspaper men, and they try to get him to say that we're not going to win the pennant. But I never heard him say one thing about giving up. And damn if we didn't win the pennant on the last day. And of course, we got in the World Series, and the Cardinals beat us in the seventh game of the World Series. And then, of course, Yogi got fired. I think this deal was made in August.
Yeah, it was.
With Yogi getting fired and Johnny Keene going to be with the Yankees. Well, of course, I was getting a haircut one morning up at New London, Connecticut, my wife's hometown, and some guy runs in the barbershop, and he says, Yogi just got fired. And I jumped like this, and I knew if Yogi's gone, I'm gone. So I finally get home a couple of weeks later, and Ralph Houck calls me from New York. And he says, you know how the managers are, they bring their own coaches. I said, yes. I said, I understand, Ralph. He said, but we would like to have you scout for us. So I said, that'll be fine. He was gonna put me in Chicago. And finally it ended up, he gave me the four states around my area, Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, and Nebraska. And I scouted for them, I don't remember how long now, but there the one season, 67, they sent me off of the scout deal to go back and manage the Binghamton Club. And anyway, and I think the Yankees made quite a few changes in 1970 in the front office. And of course, they let me go and they let some others go. And they said that Atlanta wanted to, would be interested in you scouting for them. So I talked the guy down at Atlanta. In fact, I think it was Eddie Robinson. I don't know, I might be wrong on that. But anyway, in the meantime, Bobby Maddox called me. He was with Milwaukee. So he offered me a 4-year job. So I took it. And that put us up until January the 1st, 1975, when I finally retired.
Well, well said. I want to do some backtracking, and go back to when you were younger in Kansas City. I know you, when we were sitting in the chair over there, you talked about playing semi-pro ball here. Did you play in high school? And I know you said you played semi-pro, but did you play anything else, American Legion or anything like that?
No, the American Legion was just coming in at that time. I did play in the Van Johnson League here, and the Van Johnson League is still going. And I played in the Van Johnson League. In fact, there were different groups around town in that area because not very many people had automobiles. So we start, a fellow by the name of Joe Diamond and Al Goodman started the Van Johnson League for kids aged 14 to 16, and we played at different places around town. And then when we all got 16, they raised the limit to 18. And then when we all got 18, they raised it to 21. And that's the only time the records were kept in the Van Johnson League was, I think it was from 1929 or 30 that they started keeping the records for the Van Johnson League. But it's a good league for amateur baseball, and it's still going. They have different fellows that sponsor it. And we had some pretty good ball players. Martin Cooper, in fact, played here. Martin Cooper and Walker Cooper. They played in the Van Johnson League. Then after that, I went away and played professional ball. And then after that, the caliber of baseball, which, you know, when you're at that age group, between 18 and 21, it started to get pretty good. And there's a lot of boys that come out of here that played in the Van Johnson League that played in the big league. Now you, one of your nice examples at this time of year is David Cohn that's gonna pitch for the Kansas City Club, I think.
One of these days.
Yeah. He played in the Van Johnson League, and there's several of them. And there's a whole list in the paper every once in a while of where they're playing and so on. There must be 30 of them from the Van Johnson League. But that's about all it did. Then, besides playing in the Van Johnson League, I played with some of the semi-pro teams around town, and that's when I was telling you that I went down and played the Flying Crows. And Guthrie was one of the Flyers on the team.
Was his cousin there at the time, Ray Mueller? Was he there as well? Do you remember?
Yes. Mueller was catching for him, Ray Mueller. And Ray Mueller, and I can't remember any of the other fellows besides Guthrie.
Go ahead.
I'm through for a minute.
Okay. Do you remember how, when you were small, how you got interested in baseball, or was it the only game around at the time?
Well, I played all three sports at Rutgers College. I played football and basketball and baseball. And, of course, I played baseball in the Van Johnson League when it was 14 years of limit. So we started off early around here. You know, age, I mean, the Van Johnson League just kept going up and up. The age, I think the age limit now is 22, so they can take in the college kids. But it's been a good league.
What positions did you play growing up?
Well, when we first started in the Van Johnson League, I was a pitcher and also an outfielder. But then when I got up to playing pro ball, I never did do any pitching. Mm-hmm. Played the outfield all the time.
When you were growing up, did you have a favorite player or a favorite team that you followed?
Well, I'm just like everybody else. I was always a Yankee fan. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up signing with Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. What did your dad do for a living, and then what did your family think about you making baseball into a career?
Well, they encouraged it. My father was sort of in the real estate business. He built a couple of buildings in 1922 on South Troost, and one of the buildings was a theater, and my mother used to sell the tickets at the Southtown Theater, and my father used to bounce all the rowdy kids, and I used to take tickets on the door. Now that was in the late 20s, and then some big outfit from California came along, and they wanted to buy the building, so they didn't want to buy it, they wanted to rent the theater. So we rented the theater, and of course, shortly after that is when I went into baseball.
You said that it was Cy Slapnicka that signed you for the Indians. But what was your big signing bonus?
I had a contingent bonus, and I think I got $300 a month wherever I played for 3 years. And then if I remained with the Cleveland Ball Club any time after May 1st, I was to get $5,000 bonus, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. The record says, anyway, that the 25th of April of 36 was the day that you first played in the big leagues. What do you remember about the first game you got into?
We went into Boston, and there was a spinal meningitis virus going around, or whatever it was. And they give us the test, everybody the test. They give us a culture, they call it. And Bruce Campbell was one of them that got it worse than any of the rest of us. And he was playing right field, and they put me in to play right field the first game I think I played. I might have pinch hit before that. But in the first game I played was in Boston. And it was against Moses Grove, Lefty Grove. And I struck out the first time against Grove, and I can remember those old fellas on the ball club that said, "Old Mose just hasn't got it anymore." You think he was 40 or 41 years old. And I think the second time up, I hit a triple off of it.
He probably didn't take much of that, did he?
I remember that. But of course, I wasn't there too long with Cleveland. As I said, I was back in New Orleans around the 4th and 5th of July. So I was only there for a short time. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, the first time I went to Cleveland was in 33, and they were playing in the big stadium downtown. But when I went back to play with them in 36, they were back in League Park, the short right field fence. And I can remember that home run I hit off of Wes Farrell. They took him out after that and went over and pulled each finger out of his glove.
He was a temperamental sort, wasn't
oh,
he?
Oh, yeah.
I want to ask you about a couple guys on that you played with in the 36 Indians. Was Johnny Allen there when you were there?
Yes.
And this, he was not wrapped too tight either, was he?
No. Johnny Allen, well, I think he won 15 straight games.
Right.
And they always accused him of throwing a spitter, which he said he never did. And then we had Mel Harder, and we had Willis Hudlund, Oral Hildebrand. They had a good pitching staff.
Was Bill Zuber there when you were there?
No, Bill Zuber was in New Orleans when I went back in 36. Mm-hmm. Bill Zuber, he was pitching for New Orleans, and then later he went up with Cleveland.
What do you remember about him?
Well, he was a funny guy. The way he had his accent, the way he talked, he was quite a boy. In fact, when I was scouting and I'd go up to Iowa, I used to go up and have dinner, have lunch with him at the Amana, at the Amana Colony. And that's the last time I'd seen him. But he was very successful in the big leagues. Mm-hmm.
Just a couple other guys. I just want to talk about the outfield that the Indians had at that time with Averill and Bosmick and Weatherly and Campbell.
Well, Weatherly took my place. And we had Milt Gallagher. The five outfielders that started the season in 36 were Bosmick, Averill, Campbell, Milt Gallagher, and myself. Then when they made the deal with New Orleans to bring in Roy Weatherly. See, Weatherly was at New Orleans. And I played with him the year before at New Orleans. And then they brought him up, and he had a real good year. And Ralph Weingartner and I went back to New Orleans. And they brought up Weatherly. And Weatherly stayed there quite some time. In fact, I think he went to the Yankees after a while, didn't he?
You got me on that one. But in 33, when you went up for that workout or that you talked about, was Walter Johnson managing the team then?
That's when I got there. During that time, it's when Roger Peckinpah got fired. Mm-hmm. And they brought in Walter Johnson. And Bib Falk was a coach. And Bib used to take me out before anybody else, and I'd go work out at batting practice. He's a left-hander. He'd be throwing batting practice for me. And I didn't know where they were going to send me. They didn't know either until the guy broke his leg. I'm just wondering if he didn't break his leg, where the hell I'd have been.
Did you get to meet Walter Johnson, though?
In fact, the Cleveland Indians came down to Zanesville and played an exhibition game. And Walter Johnson pitched a couple innings. Mm-hmm. I hit a double off of Walter Johnson.
Oh, that's a good story.